Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.
Thank you so much for staying with us. So we get to our favorite, my favorite part of the show, where we get to do books. And it's that day again where we speak to an author today. And I'm so pleased to have in studio with me Aris Mwanza, who is the author of a book called The Lion's Den. And thank you for coming through.
Thank you for being
with us. And I mean, are you regularly visiting South Africa? Is this the kind of place you come to visit often?
Not enough. Okay. I love coming to South Africa. It's so fun. It's just very vibrant. Joburg is vibrant. Cape Town is beautiful. So I live in the U.S. now, but when I lived in Zambia, where I'm from, South Africa was the place for a vacation. So I was always here. So now it's a bit more of a hike to get from New York to Joburg, but I love it here. It's really, it feels like a home away from home.
If I didn't know any better, I would say this is your maybe 10th novel.
Oh, I love that. Thank you for saying that.
There is such grace in your writing, such elegance in your writing. You deal with really, really important themes. But you're not dogmatic, you're not preachy, and I think that takes a craft to do that, to not find yourself sort of imposing yourself and your frustrations on the pages, so that we can stay with it and still enjoy the writing, because it's also part of entertainment, right? So there's that fine balance between dealing with the issues and still entertaining us. So did that come easily to you?
I wouldn't say it came easy, but I would say it was certainly intentional. So I wanted it to be a thriller. I wanted it to be fast-paced and a page-turner, but I also wanted it to address issues that I am very passionate about. Issues of discrimination, fundamental human rights, LGBTQ plus rights, but not in a way that would turn a reader off.
Yeah, exactly.
I wanted it to do it in a way. And there's a whole cast of characters that represent different point of views. So I wanted to come to it in an open way. I wanted to have to use the narrative to have a conversation. And hopefully open minds by the end of it. So my intention was through the characters and you become sort of, you know, grab the reader and take them on this journey. And the journey is through the protagonist, Grace, and her efforts to try to defend Bessie Mulenga. She's a young, inexperienced lawyer. He is a queer teenager who has been persecuted but also prosecuted for crimes against the order of nature, which is the Zambian penal code criminalizing same-sex relations. I know in South Africa it's very different from the rest of the continent, but the law in Zambia is still on the books, and in many other countries in Africa you see the same thing. Ironically, it's a colonial law which has not been repealed in most of other African countries, which is another reason why I love being in South Africa. So progressive.
But having said that, I also find that I love the fact that you deal with the paradox quite well. That you have, and you speak of South Africa. Well, South Africa, in as much as we have the law that protects the LGBTQ plus community, you still have tensions with communities, and to your point about the fact that you say, you know, this is a colonial law. Well, isn't it interesting that often it's referred to as, it's an African thing. It's being men, being a man is an African thing. Whereas, actually, as you said, it's a colonial law that is sometimes used by the very same communities to enforce their prejudice, but using it as either religious or African and so on. So those paradoxes, I think, are very, very interesting.
It's exactly right. It's exactly right. But at least in South Africa, the law is on your
side.
Whereas in a lot of other countries, and not just Africa, but yeah. I speak about Zambia because that's my country, yes. and I feel like I know it well,
yeah.
and I can talk about it with some authority.
Yes.
Some people would argue otherwise, but I do have a legal background.
Do you go back often?
Yes, actually, I just came from
from
Zambia,
tours.
And I've been I've been coming back and forth mainly for personal reasons. Mm, my mom has been very ill, and unfortunately she passed away recently. But I've been coming home a lot, and it's been a revelation in a lot of ways, because you almost assume that progress is going to happen with time. And unfortunately, that's not the reality. Progress doesn't happen magically. And I think one of the reasons and the inspiration for writing the book is we've got to do something. We've got to do something differently to push the agenda. And it's not by, as you said, being preachy or dogmatic or insisting. We have to find other ways. And I think the power of books and storytelling is a different way to come at some of these challenges and finding a way to have the conversation.
Yeah. Yeah.
And exactly what you said. These are colonial laws. Mm. So when you say, oh, it's our culture. No, it's not our culture.
Yeah. We're not going to go deep into the conversation because I want you to read the book for those of you who are listening. But I want to talk a little bit about, you speak of books and the relevance and importance of books in bringing up some of these topics. But let's talk about your book tour in Zambia. How was this book received?
The book tour that didn't happen.
Really?
It hasn't happened.
Really?
And I think part of it, and I was telling my wonderful publicist, Janine Daniel, earlier, what happened in Zambia. And unfortunately, it's very homophobic, ultra-conservative.
Mm-hmm.
And initially, I was working with a large book club in Zambia. Mm-hmm. They support particularly Zambian authors abroad when they're coming back. They host them. They do all these wonderful things to really promote. And so this was happening.
Mm.
I didn't realize that they hadn't done their homework. They didn't know what the book was about. And so I sort of was going home, as I mentioned, for other reasons. But I was like, this is fantastic. I will, do a bit of a book tour, launch my book in Zambia. And sort of the leader of the book club said, well, we have to have coffee because I need to speak with you. I was like, okay, fantastic, thinking this is about planning and logistics. And she's like, I'm really sorry, but we can't do this. I'm like, what do you mean?
Wow.
That's crazy. What do you mean? You're a book club.
And this is a book.
And it's I'm a Zambian. So, what's not to like about this? And she said, well, unfortunately, some of our members are conservative, but also a lot of our members are scared to be associated with a book. So it is. Yeah, exactly. But it does speak to the power of books, right?
Yes.
Books can inspire fear.
There is fear that I could be associated with this and that maybe somebody may shut this down, in itself speaks to the power of the pen and the fact that it is powerful and it does land.
It really is. It really is. So that's been a heartbreak for me and something I have to figure out. I will do it myself.
Yeah.
But it was very disappointing that even a book club, I wasn't expecting the government or sort of any official institution to do something that might suggest endorsement, because there is not just prosecution, but there is persecution. And so you have the legal, but you also have the political, you have the church, you have societal pressures that are conspiring against the LGBTQ plus community. And unfortunately, most have to live a double life, be in hiding, or suppress their identity so that they can live and work and exist in this homophobic society.
You're very empathetic with your characters. I like that. Even those who I think you don't agree with, but I think you treat them quite well. The priest, as I said to you, Father Sebastian. And I could see places where you obviously disagree with choices that some of the characters make. And the realities of what real life presents rather than the utopia of what would be nice to have. But the way in which you've treated your characters is with a lot of empathy. Was that easy?
In a way. I think for me, I go inside. I'm not a perfect human. I try to be a good person, but I do have dark thoughts. But I do want, I think it's important in literature to come with empathy, because otherwise the characters will feel hollow.
Yes.
And even the minor characters, yes. I have to sort of go inside myself and try to understand, where is this person coming from? Why do they hold these positions? Father Sebastian is quite easy. I'm a Catholic, and so I know, you know, how the Catholic Church works, for better or for worse, often for worse. But there has to be a kind of logic to the character, and if you don't empathize, I think one character, another character to speak to is Grace's mother.
Yes.
And you know, I really spent a lot of time thinking, what is it that would make a mother
marry off her daughter?
And we know child marriage happens all over the world. All over the world. I don't think there's a single country where there isn't child. But what is it that drives, what level of desperation? And so,
or what level of love
in her
mind? Yes, because that's that difficulty, right?
In her mind, she really believes, the mother really believes, this is best for Grace.
Because I love my daughter.
I want the best for her. They are literally starving. And she's like, look, I have arranged for you to have
a better life.
To have a good life. Yeah. Tomorrow you will have abundance. You will have food. You will have status. You will not worry. And you're coming to me with some pipe dream about being a lawyer, going to Lusaka. We don't even have money. You know, we're scratching in the ground like chickens. And you're talking about this childish nonsense. So get real. Get married. I've done something
wonderful
for you, which will also help, you know, the mother too, by the way. But, you know, I think when you come with empathy to the characters and you try to really sit with them and walk in their shoes and understand what is driving this character to do this action, then I think you can start, even with minor characters, you can, you know, it's not a caricature. It feels like a real person. And I want a reader to say, yeah, you know, I get it. I understand. Yeah. Oh, that sounds like my auntie, or that sounds like my, you know, my grandmother or grandfather or someone I disagree with really strongly, but I can sit with these characters a little while, whereas if it's in real life, I'll just be like, ah, where's the exit? I'm out of here.
I mean, I loved contemplating on issues. Let's stay with Grace and the mother's issue at different times in my life, in different stages. So putting myself in the mother's shoes because I'm a mother now, putting myself in Grace's shoes because what did I dream for myself as a young woman, and what that means when you juxtapose that to your parents' ambitions for you, and how that sits with you, and what happens to the older you, whether you think, you know, should I be resentful, should I not be resentful, did they steal my childhood from me? Because those are the issues that she grapples with, and forgiveness being a big part of it as well.
And as you grow older, I think you have more understanding of where your parents are coming from. You might not agree, but you have an understanding of where they're coming from, and most of the time they really want what's best for you. For you from their point of view. And you are like, well, yes, but
There's me,
by the way. I'm a whole person, and I have my own ambitions, and I have my own dreams, and I want to do something completely different.
Yeah. The book, by the way, will get you thinking a lot. It's not necessarily going to resolve all of the issues, but it'll get you thinking. I want to touch a little bit on you and what inspired you to write this. I believe it was years in the making.
Very many years. 9, to be precise.
But the thing that inspired you to write the book is quite a sad story, actually. Do you want to talk about it?
It is, and it's something I've sat with for now decades. Mm. It was a story in the local press in Zambia about what was described as a boy walking through the marketplace in a dress.
14 was he?
But they just said a teen. Mm. And this poor kid was beaten up by a mob. And the article, I mean, that didn't surprise me because during the late 80s, 90s, there was almost, it was...
Intolerance.
There was a high intolerance. Yeah. Even, you know, young women, if they decided your skirt is too short, they'd beat you up. And so there was that mood and atmosphere. So that wasn't surprising to me. But what was surprising was the lack of empathy, sympathy, for this kid.
He asked for it, so to speak.
That's exactly how it was written up.
Yeah.
That the kid provoked the mob. And it was a mob that set upon this kid. And so that sat with me and like, well, who would be a defender of this kid? I don't know what happened to this kid apart from being beaten up. Obviously, the fate of Bessie in the story is far more serious and grave. Yeah. But that sat with me for a long time. Who would be the defender? Why wasn't I a defender?
Mm.
And so that was sort of the seed of the character Grace.
Yeah.
It's in her DNA. She is a defender. She becomes a lawyer because she's a defender. And that is almost an extension of herself. Of course, she has this journey of learning that law and justice are two different things. So she's a master of the law, but finding justice for Bessie is something completely different.
Yeah.
And she has to learn that. She's very young. She's very inexperienced. She's very naive. Mm-hmm. But she grows. And I think at the end, she's a little bit wiser.
Yeah. A lot of those issues of trying to law and injustice is not necessarily one and the same thing that you deal with. But I also love that you deal a lot with patriarchy, colonialism. It's in the little details, and I think we really, really haven't dealt with how we reflect on what colonialism has done to us as a people. And you depict that very elegantly. For instance, when you describe the buildings, and I was struck by that, your descriptions of the buildings, of course, colonial buildings,
right?
but the admiration for a colonial building, I mean, isn't that strange? While we hate colonialism and what it's done to us, this aspiration to be in that building, to work in that building. And I think that still remains very true for many Africans, and how we really are struggling to come out of that patriarchal colonial system and fully be ourselves.
Yes.
And fully realize ourselves. And that's the tension, isn't it?
It is a tension. It is real. I mean, we're here speaking English, right?
Isn't that, you know?
We speak English better. We read in English. We go to school in English. We learn. We know it usually better than our own mother tongues.
Yes.
As you said, the buildings, all of these were designed very specifically. And I think as we get older and mature, you sort of have a realization that these huge, imposing colonial buildings with columns, they were built with purpose to say who is in charge, who is the power here. And we haven't really, as you said, I think you put your finger on the pulse there. We haven't really come to terms with the original sin or the original sins of colonialism.
Mm.
We've carried them forward, and then you get this. Oh, it's our culture. It was never our culture.
Mm.
Our culture has been erased.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so we need to go back. And some of these are very convenient because it continues the patriarchy.
Absolutely.
And the people who are saying this are the ones who are the beneficiaries.
Absolutely.
And so we really have to be able to interrogate, to have the conversations. Mm. And that's all I want with my book. I'm like, especially in Zambia, but in other countries, let's have a conversation, a real conversation. Mm. Not to say, oh, this is, you know, the imperialist, or this is, you know, some sort of conspiracy.
And confront what we have adopted as a so-called our culture, which is not necessarily the case, actually.
Right.
In many, if you really interrogate it, it's not true.
And there isn't one culture, right? I mean, I'm in Senga, and it's a matrilineal.
Yeah.
Culture.
In fact, many African cultures are matrilineal cultures.
So what does that mean?
Yeah.
And how do we bring that into a modern context that will work better for us? And it doesn't mean you just adopt things and swallow them whole because it's our culture. We now have to say, okay, these are the things that work for us as a society. Mm. These are the things. And we know discrimination, you know, any form of discrimination ultimately pulls apart the fabric of a community.
I want to talk a little bit before we run out of time about your own work and your own background as a human rights lawyer and the work that you ultimately are doing with the Bill, Melinda and Bill Foundation. And whether you have somehow come to, number one, the acceptance of the fact that justice and law are not necessarily one and the same thing. And whether, especially now, you feel, optimistic about the world, where you sit as a human rights lawyer, where you've been engaging a lot with these themes in your daily work. Where are you and where's your head at?
So just to be clear, I'm not a human rights lawyer.
You're not.
I am a gender equality advocate.
Got you.
And so I haven't worked in law for a long time.
Okay.
But I think it informs how I approach the world and the work.
Qualified as a lawyer, but have not.
Yes. Okay. And I've spent too much time in school, so I did law first, but then I did international development studies. Okay. And so spent a lot of time actually in global health. And you'll see in the book, I do, at the time, it was during the HIV/AIDS pandemic. And so
you do a lot with that on the book, in the book.
Mm. I do speak to that in the book. And so it's, so I'm on sabbatical right now because I'm starting to work on my next book.
Oh, it's bitten.
My next two books.
It's bitten.
I can't take another years.
It's bitten.
I can't do another 9 years.
The bug is bitten,
So I'm going to focus on books for the next 6 months, but I'm not done with global health, which I worked in for a long time, and then gender equality, which I've been working on much more recently. But there, it's sort of a little bit of a different take. It's working with on women's leadership specifically and trying to understand in developing countries, what are the drivers of change?
Mm.
What are the... There's law, yes, but there's also policy. There's also normative change. Mm-hmm. Important things like this conversation that we're having, radio.
Mm.
How do we start to shift mindsets into a progressive place? It's not by, you know, sort of banging the table and saying you must. It's by understanding what are the things that drive the status quo, and are there some levers to try to change that? And what's the role of philanthropy? Mm-hmm. Philanthropy is not government,
mm-hmm.
but are there some catalytic places where some investments might make a difference? And that is a journey. I mean, it's a very new thing for philanthropy to be investing in gender equality and change.
Mm.
It's not an easy thing. Mm. It's not going to be a quick thing.
Mm.
But trying to be smart and data-driven about what might work and keeping our fingers crossed. But I think more importantly is the work that you do. You know, people listen. Mm. And you're in their ear day in, day out. They love you. They're curious about what you have to say. You bring in guests, of course. But ultimately, I think the normative change and the things, you know, raising these issues, having these conversations in a very open way, people can listen, they can think about it, they can shout at the radio, they can disagree, but ultimately they come
back. They call in as well.
They call in, yes, they give you their opinions.
Yes.
But they're listening. Mm. But we will continue this conversation. We're going to have a book launch.
On Thursday.
On Thursday, yes.
Rosebank Exclusive Books.
So I'm really, really excited. This is my first launch in Africa.
Welcome.
Yes. Welcome. I know. So what better place to do it in a friendly environment? It's not going to be
You'll be embraced here.
In Lusaka. But yes, I just want to thank you so much for having me. I want to thank my publisher in South Africa, Jonathan Ball, Canongate in the UK, my wonderful publicist, Janine Daniels from JDD Publicity. So it's a team effort.
It's a compelling read, as I said, very gracefully written.
Hence the protagonist.
The protagonist, Grace, right?
Yes.
No, really, really wonderfully put together. And also the fact that, you know, you deal with these issues, but it's entertaining.
You've got to be.
It's entertaining.
You've got to be. I'm so delighted that you said that, because that was my intention. If you're not entertaining, I think you're not going to get people to the end. And so hopefully I'm just excited that you enjoyed it to the very end.
What time, Janine, does the 6 p.m. exclusive books Rosebank, and the title of the book is The Lion's Den, and the author is Iris Mwanza. Iris, thank you so much for coming through, and all the best.
Thank you for having me.
All the best.
It's been
really
a pleasure.
It's a fantastic book.
Thank you.
Got to sign mine before you leave.
Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.